Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon. We want to welcome you to today's episode of the American College Experience. My name is Jason Haynes. I am the host of today's program. I'm also the Chief Executive Officer of the UR Tennis Network, and I am so excited that you have tuned in live today. We have an exciting broadcast for you and fellow listeners. We're going to interview Ms. Jamie Meganson. I have known her for the longest time as Ms. Jamie Campbell. Jamie and I met each other when my days at Lee College, very early on. She was the head women's coach at Binghamton University. Then she transferred herself over to the University of Texas, El Paso, and now coaches out at Randolph College, a Division III program in Virginia. And what makes Jamie special is she's one of the few coaches in the United States of America that coaches both men's and women's. And we're excited to have her on today, and we'll get to her shortly. If you're tuning in for the first time today, congratulations. You have found the best-kept secret of tennis on the radio, on the media, on the Internet. We try to be a complement to the Tennis Channel. We have broadcasted now for 3, going on 4 years. We have over 1,000 hours of tennis interviews logged into our library. We've had famous people. We've had infamous people. We've had people that think they're famous on our network. We've given them an hour's worth of airtime, which is more airtime than the Tennis Channel gives, which is more airtime than NBC gives, CBS, USA, any other broadcast network out there that devotes themselves supposedly to tennis, ESPN included, to true tennis people. We are the ones that are doing it. We currently have 3 shows on. We have Parenting Aces. That show comes on Monday at 11 o'clock Eastern Time. I hope I'm saying that right. That's Lisa Goodman Stone. Lisa will shoot me if I say it wrong. She covers junior tennis. She writes a wonderful blog out there, parentingaces.com. Go to it, read it. That lady knows junior tennis. And then Wednesday, before I come on the air, is American Tennis with Chuck Creasy, one of the great coaches in America. Does a wonderful job in exploring the issues of what's wrong with and what's right with American tennis. And believe me, there are both. And then there's me. I try to cover the college tennis world. A former college coach of about 20 years. My program was suspended in 2011. So now I talk to some of my fellow friends, some of my enemies, some of my rivals, and some people I never knew, but I'd heard about. And we talk about the college tennis system. And we are passionate individuals that love to talk about tennis. If you think you're one of those passionate individuals that loves to talk about tennis, then please get in touch with me. You can email me at jhaynes, H-A-Y-N-E-S, the number 10, the letter S, at gmail.com. And we can talk about you hosting a program here on the UR Tennis Network. But I tell you, it's tough work. You got to love to talk about tennis. And it can't just be one of these 6-week deals. I mean, you got to really love to talk about tennis, and that's what the three of us do. We've had others come and go. We've had others that come, and they've decided not to stay on the tennis team, and that's all right. They're a bunch of individuals, and I can respect that. Sometimes, you know, people got to be out there and be cavaliers. That's all right. That's how innovation starts. But I, being a college tennis coach, definitely understand the benefits of being on a team and getting a boat propelled across the ocean. We're going to get there a lot faster. So, on to some college tennis news, and I have been trying to pull this up, but the wonders of the internet, and I say that with a question mark, the wonders of the internet still amaze me to this day. Here we are. We've been at this internet thing for 10-plus years, and we're still not very fast or very connected, are we? So the ITA, USTA have joined forces again. This is from the itatennis.com website. What they're going to do here is they're going to help try to make the transition to professional tennis easier. So they're going to turn to the USTA Collegiate National Team. They've had three of college tennis's brightest stars qualified for the spots on the team. Virginia junior Mitchell Frank, he won the All-American Championships. Clay Thompson, who won the Indoor Intercollegiate Championships. And North Carolina freshman and recently named ITA Rookie of the Year, Jamie Loeb, who won both the All-American and Indoor Championships for the women. They're already on the team. The remaining spots are still to be determined, and we'll go to the players who earn ITA Player of the Year and Rookie of the Year honors, NCAA singles champions, if they are American, and the highest-ranked American collegians in the ATP and WTA rankings as of August 11th. The team will be comprised of six men and six women. Notice, no Division II, no Division III, and no junior college or NAIA kids. This is an elite group of people. Why? Because these are supposed to be the best in America. Eric Buderacki would not have a chance on this team. Your Division III product, sorry, the USTA and the ITA just don't think you're good enough. The goal of the national team is to help our collegians make the extremely tough transition into a career and life on the professional tour, said national coach Dustin Taylor. We know how easy this transition has been since John Isner made the transition a few years back. We have not had a college tennis player make it from the pros into the top 10. And once that guy loses his serve and his ability to hit a forehand, we are in serious trouble, people. Bradley Klon and Stevie Johnson are in the 60s. And they were great college players. What are we going to do? College women? The best example for college women making the jump from the pros, from college to the pros, I can figure out probably Lisa Raymond. Made a great doubles player, not a great singles player. This is a year-round program now that gives the American college players opportunities to participate in pro circuit events, USTA, the annual International Master U part competition in France. The players also have a chance as practice partners for the U.S. Davis Cup and Fed Cup teams who are rocking the planet, and they receive appropriate funding, coaching, and training, and other competitive opportunities throughout the year courtesy of the USTA Player Development. Now, I'm a big fan of USTA Player Development as long as it works, and we currently know that it is not working, so I don't know how much money they're investing there, but the $300 million that they make off that U.S. Open, maybe they need to think about putting it somewhere else. We're not getting a great return on this. PA and player development haven't gone together in a long time. So I'd be careful here. So there seem to be a lot of other people out there that know what they're doing here. Let me see here. Besides Dustin Taylor, Bo Hodge, Brett Ross. Bo is from from the University of Oklahoma, Brett Ross, Wake Forest, Derek Schwant from Georgia Tech, Taylor Walker, Wes Knott, and Felix Alvarado. I'm sure that all of these teams mentioned all have American players from the USDA development system. Not an international one on the bunch. What do you bet? I don't know. We'll see. I like Coach Lee Taylor Walker. He's been on the show. The others I don't know a lot about. I haven't contacted them. They haven't been on the show. Maybe I should look into them and see what they have to say here. We'll be working on them. The other big exciting news, and I know, Coach Campbell, you're out there waiting on me, and I'll get to you in just a second. Today is draft day, 2015 ITA Division I kickoff weekend. They held the draft today. They're going to play these February 6th through the 9th, 2015. Oh, no, sorry. Woo. Sorry, that's the date for the team indoor championship. These are the 16 teams, or 16 sites that will host, you know, for the kickoff weekend. You know, they play these four team duels and see if they can create some excitement and get them into the team indoors and all that stuff. Again, a great chance for some interdivisional play here, but not. ITA doesn't think about that. This is a snobby thing, so they just do Division I here. You know, they could expand it to 8, start on the Friday morning, and get some good D3, D2, JUCO, NAIA programs in there and make it a big college tennis event. But who am I? What do I know? I'm just Joe Bag of Donuts. That would just take too much planning. Whew. All right. So we'll go over that again a little bit more next week, and we'll see if we can cover some more ground here. And I'm hoping that she's here. Again, modern technology. You know, as Wayne Bryan told me once, I've got the most elaborate studio in the history of tennis. So here she is. Let me see if I can bring her in. Coach Megginson, are you there?
Hey, Jason, I'm here.
Oh, very good.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. I almost called you Coach Campbell out of habit. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. That's okay. That's fine, too.
Well, Jamie, you and I, we go way back, and I know and love your story. But, Jamie, there are going to be a lot of people that listen in today that just have no idea who Jamie Megginson is. So can you kind of give us a biography here so we can start with the show?
Sure. College tennis biography, right? Let's see. Well, I played college tennis myself back in the early to mid-90s at Guilford College in Greensboro, North Carolina. Had a great experience there, had no idea I wanted to get in college coaching when I was a player myself. I thought I wanted to be in the medical field, and about a month before my college graduation, I decided I just wanted to be around the game, and since I had such a great experience in college tennis, I wanted to look into coaching. So my parents were not very happy because it was just a month before graduation, career path. But I was a teaching pro for a year and a half trying to figure out how to get this into the coaching career. And my coach, Gail Curry, from Guilford, she helped me a lot. And she was good friends with the head coach at James Madison University. And she needed an assistant. And Coach Curry called me up and said, hey, JMU has an assistant position open, and I had applied to their graduate program in kinesiology. So anyway, it just all worked out. Perfect timing, I guess you could say. Maria Malerba needed an assistant, and I needed a position. So anyway, I fell in love with it as an assistant there and got my degree in kinesiology and applied for a bunch of jobs. Just wanted to get any head coaching job, get my foot in the door. Didn't even matter, full-time assistant. I just wanted to stay in coaching. And Binghamton University gave me my first opportunity. And then in the late 1998 was my first year there. And they were transitioning from Division II to Division I, actually from 3 to 2 to 1. So my first year there was their first year as a Division II team, or program, I should say. I had to go through 3 years in D2 to become Division I. So my fourth and fifth years at Binghamton University were at the Division I level in the America East Conference. And I just really, professionally, I was very happy there. But they had really cold winters in upstate New York, much colder than where I'm from in Kentucky. So I just really, I just wanted to get out of the cold more than anything. And professionally, I did want a, at that point, a higher level program, just a fully funded program. So I went to the absolute extreme opposite and was offered the opportunity at the University of Texas at El Paso, which, as you know, is in the middle of the desert, and it's sunny all the time, which is much different than cloudy Binghamton, New York. But I was, yeah, do you have a question?
No, keep going. I love the story. Keep going. Okay.
So anyway, yeah, I was honored by, they offered me the position at UTEP. Would have been August 2003, and didn't know a soul out in El Paso. My parents, my dad was a little bit, not nervous, but he said, are you sure you want to move out there? They don't have any green grass, you know, or my grandmother was afraid of the tarantulas for me. It was crazy reasons from my family, but anyway, took the plunge and flew out to El Paso. As I said, didn't know a soul, and was all very confident. I thought since I had built the program at Binghamton, I could do it anywhere, and got started in 2003 at UTEP and built the program in 7 years to be a real solid and competitive program in Conference USA. And then about 4 years ago, my fiance at that point, now my husband, we wanted to come back east, and this opportunity at Randolph College came up in Lynchburg, Virginia, which is where I'm at now. And my husband's family is from here, and an opportunity to get back east, be closer to our families, and to coach at a small college, which is where I went, at Guilford, a small private liberal arts college. So they flew me out for an interview here in Lynchburg, and I guess a day or two later they offered the position to me and talked to my now husband, and I said, let's do it. So flew, came back east, and I've been here at Randolph College, which is a Division III school. So now I'm coaching Division III, and even bigger, I coach men and women, where before I just coached the women. And it's been great fun. It's been great fun. The men, they fought me tooth and nail, I'd say, my first year for sure, even a little bit in the second year. But now that I have my own recruits in, my own guys, it's been an absolute blast coaching the men, and I think I've got it pretty well figured out, coaching both teams, because you really have to manage your time, but it's been great fun. So that's where I am now. Just finished my fourth season here at Randolph College. Now I'm talking to you.
Yeah. Jamie, we're going to talk about Randolph in a second, but I want to talk to you about Binghamton first. And this is where you and I first got to know each other. We You recruited one of my players, and what I love about your story, and I want to talk to you just a little bit about this, was 9/11. And what I remember about 9/11 was is that my player, and I won't name her off the bat, I try to stay away from naming names a lot of times on the show, but my player had just gone up to New York to be up there at Binghamton with you, and 9/11 happened. So as a tennis coach up in New York when 9/11 happened, can you help me understand what was going on with the mentality of the New Yorkers at the time?
A fear. They were. Everybody was just scared. They didn't really know what was going on. I actually, my brother, one of my brothers and my uncle lived in the city back then, on the Upper West Side. So they really were a part of it. But at Binghamton, so much of the student body there are from New York City, Long Island, just the southern part of the state. So I would say. Pretty much every student at Binghamton knew somebody that was in one of the trade centers, was in one of the two towers. And I was teaching tennis class when it happened, and yeah, a couple of the girls came down late to class, and they were just frantic because they just talked to their parents and. I had no idea what had happened, and they're like, a plane's crashed into one of the towers, and we're all in shock going, what? It wasn't for real, and Binghamton's only three and a half hours away from the city, so it's still, you know, pretty close. And anyway, just shock, and just didn't know how to have class that day, because everybody was so nervous about their family and friends, and and then one of the coaches came down to get me and said, Jamie, you need to come inside. You need to call your brother and your uncle. So thank goodness they were all right. But then, you know, we were just watching it on TV. Of course, class was canceled. And, you know, everybody was just praying for their family and friends. But it really hit home at that school specifically. So.
Yeah, and I know scary time. It had to be – Yeah, for us even in Baytown, I mean, we had rumors shooting all over the place that day of the, you know, the international planes. They were going to crash into the refinery there in Baytown and all. And I can only imagine being up there in New York, you know, being so close to that, the emotion and having to deal with the kids there on campus, what your school went through.
Yeah, it was a tough period. I can't believe it's already been, almost 13 years ago. But soon after that, I went down to visit my brother, and he hadn't been down to see the disaster yet. And so when I went there, he went with me, and it was very devastating. You can't really describe it. It was just devastating. But tough time.
Now, Binghamton was a Division II program at the time you were there, right, Jamie?
It was Division II at the start, the first 3 years. And the last 2 years, we were Division I.
Okay, so.
They transitioned from 3 to 2 to 1. Yeah. So.
Okay, and so then you went to UTEP, which is a Division I program of a little bigger standard, so to speak. And I like what you said, that you were out in the desert. Quite a big climate change. One that you enjoyed, I hope.
Mm-hmm. I did. I loved the weather out there because I love the heat.
Well, since I'm here in Texas now, El Paso, really a different kind of animal out here in Texas. I mean, we can drive 12 hours, and I still can't be in El Paso. So were the Texans nice to you coming from New York?
Oh, yeah, the El Pasoans, they're very they're very, very welcoming, very family-oriented town, El Paso, I learned my Spanish improved immensely because it was all around me, and that was a great experience to, experience a different culture, the Hispanic culture, and to be right there on the Mexican border, you know, on the Rio Grande. It was, I really enjoyed that, just like when I went from the southeast of Kentucky up to the northeast of New York. That was another change of culture, and that's something I've really enjoyed experience over the past 16 years as a head coach.
Right. Now, and this is where, again, you and I and our relationship is starting to really kind of cement itself in, and we saw each other. You had a great tournament there in the fall. You invited us to the junior college out there. You were one of those coaches that supported junior college tennis. Jamie, help me understand what was it about JC tennis that you liked?
Well, the coaches. I mean, you for instance, and your longtime, your former coach and mentor, Coach Peterson, I believe.
Yeah.
John Peter.
Yeah.
No. Yes. From Tyler. I mean, of course, our relationship really blossomed. You know, we worked together really well. I helped you get some players, and of course, you helped me with a couple. But I think those were just what attracted me to the junior college player was a lot of them were hardworking young people that, for whatever reason, you know, a little bit of a different reason why they started with the junior college first. But they had those 2 years to mature and to really figure out what they wanted their degree to be in, what they wanted to do with their life. And a lot of that also had to do, I think, with the junior college coach that they had in the program to give them the right direction. But I think just that maturation of those 2 years in junior college is very attractive to a four-year college coach because you know they're going to come in and be no nonsense, and you know, that's also part of the recruiting process, finding those hardworking kids. But to me, that was helpful. I mean, very helpful. They were ready to go their junior and senior year, and I had a scholarship to help them out to reach their goals and to help build our program. And they also had learned how to be a team leader in those first 2 years. So it's really a win-win situation. Learned how to study, you know.
Yeah.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it's great, Jamie. Now,
okay.
No, it's exactly what we're looking for, you know. And you know, we were thankful there at Lee that we had coaches such as yourself that gave us that exposure and allowed us to participate with your program because it was a cooperation. And I think that college mm-hmm. tennis sometimes misses that. You know, we need more of that.
Yeah, that's also how I am, though, too. So I think it depends on the personality of the coach. And
yeah, I agree.
You know,
you have
to think out the box. The recruiting, you know, the recruiting strategy that worked at Binghamton didn't work at UTEP. And then the recruiting strategy that worked at both of those schools wasn't enough for here at Randolph. So you always have to determine him. For me at Binghamton and at UTEP, and I've also actually started a little junior college recruiting here at Randolph at the Division III level.
Excellent.
So, yeah, sure.
Very good for you. Very good.
Talking to a couple kids right now, actually.
Excellent. So now you've made the tradition. I mean, you've done a lot of this. You've gone NCAA Division III or Division II. Division One, now Division Three, and you know, each of these four-year schools. Let's talk about Randolph College a little bit here. I mean, what kind of school? How many kids do you have at Randolph?
Well, we're a small private school. Just to give you and the audience a little bit of a background, Randolph College used to be Randolph-Macon Women's College, and the college went co-ed 8 years ago. And so the student body from this past year was about 700 students, which, you know, the college wants a bigger enrollment, of course, but the biggest they're ever going want the college to be is about 1,100 students, maybe 1,200. When you go through a transition from being a single gender educational institution to co-educational, you're changing, and we had to change our name because of our brother college in Richmond, Randolph-Macon. That was our former brother school. So we had to change the population that we recruited students from and our entire, not our entire identity, but part of it with our name change. So nobody knew who we were. So that's why the enrollment hasn't reached, you know, 1,000 students as quickly as someone might think, because we just, there was so much change in identity and even name. So I've heard it's about a 10-year process, and we're, I mean, I feel the past two freshman classes have been the biggest in 20 to 30 years, and this incoming freshman class is going to be the biggest yet, so in 30 years.
Jamie,
so it's
going to
be 1,100 students, so, yeah.
Go ahead, finish.
No, that was it. You know, it was a long answer to a short question. But just wanted to give a little background that 700 students is not, you know, that's just where we are right now. The goal is to be 1,100, and we're well on our way. I think it's important just to understand the background and history of the college.
Well, and that's what we're after here, because as I shared with you, this is, we want to give some exposure to Randolph and let people know you're out there. I'm going to guess that there were some pretty excited ladies on campus when it went co-ed.
I wasn't here then, so I only know what I've heard, but initially it seems like it was the opposite, actually. Not all of them, of course, I'm sure, but from what I understand, at least, don't take this as a fact, but from what I understand, a lot of the women wanted to go to a women's college. That's why they came to Randolph-Macon, and so they were not entirely happy with the decision, but I think most of them understood. From what I understand, it was a financial decision, which is why I believe a lot of single-gender institutions go co-ed. It's just really not the way of the world anymore. The college just finished a $6 million renovation to the student center about a year ago, was completed a year ago, and five alumni, gave $6 million in less than 6 months. So
oh, wow.
To me, how I see that, and that would have been, you know, that building the funds, recruiting for the funds, just trying to fundraise for the new center, that would have been, what, 4 years ago probably? So just a lot of the alumni have come on board really happy with where the college is at right now and where it's going, all the improvements on campus with the facilities. The athletic facilities have been enhanced tenfold, I mean, so much. Because the athletic department as a women's college was more recreational, and now having men on campus, the board and the college itself understood that this needed to be an emphasis of support financially and just support of the decision itself of having athletic programs and facilities to have them be competitive within our conference, which is the Old Dominion Athletic Conference, or the ODAC. And, for instance, we have a, six years ago, a brand-new state-of-the-art lacrosse and soccer turf field was built with beautiful stadium seating from up above and a state-of-the-art track. Our track and field team was just added last year. Our tennis courts were redone. We have 8 really beautiful outdoor tennis courts that were redone bottom-up fall of 2011. They were completed, and everything is new. The foundation, and now that we're just finished our third year of having these new courts, we continue to get compliments from other coaches, other people in the community, but just what such a nice facility it is. So they've been really committed, the college has been really committed to building the athletic facilities and the programs. The two that have already reached national status is our men's soccer and men's basketball, and they only had programs for 7 years, obviously, having been for only 8 years on campus. And men's basketball has already been at the national tournament with an at-large bid, top 25 in the country a couple times, and men's soccer has already won the conference tournament and the regular season conference tournament and been to the national tournament in just 7 years. That's pretty amazing to me.
Wow.
We're getting there on the tennis. Our tennis program has improved immensely over the past 4 years. The department, the college was committed to making all of the head coaches full-time, which that wasn't always the case. So all the head coaches are full-time now, and that makes a huge difference in the time that a person can put into building the program. And of course, recruiting is the foundation of having a successful program, as you know. And we've had switching to tennis and not just the broad athletic programs, but both programs this year had just real turnaround, setting program records conference-wise and overall win-wise this year. So the men finally made the conference tournament. The guys were just really happy to make that reach that milestone. And then the women have had a little bit of quicker success on the women's side, and simply just the recruiting success has been quicker. And they finished fifth this year. And just to give you an idea of where both programs were, but especially the women, when I started here 4 years ago, I had 2 to 3 girls on the team that could play tennis, two specifically that really were returning players, and they were fantastic. They were seniors on the team, and I was lucky to have them because they provided the leadership that I needed that year. But basically everybody else on the team was a beginner or advanced beginner. I was teaching forehands, I was teaching score, and so it was a big change from the level I'd had in El Paso. But now I've even got a couple of international players on my team that I recruited. So I also do recruit internationally here as well. And we finished fifth in the conference and had really tight matches with the third and fourth place team in the conference. So we're getting better.
I can tell.
Long-winded answer, now, sorry.
No, that's all right, Jamie, and that's what this is about. So we want to give you a fair chance here to tell everybody about the school. Your season is definitely a little bit different than the Division I season. Can you tell us the big differences between the two?
Sure. Well, the length of it really is the biggest. In Division III, you're allowed 19 weeks out of the school, out of the academic year, to train your athletes. So you break that up into two segments. Basically, in the spring, that's our main season, just like in Division I, Division II, with the NCAA tournament being in May. It's about 13 weeks, so the end of January through the end of April, unless you make the NCAAs, and, of course, that's in May. And then whatever I have left, which is normally, we'll say, 6 weeks, I use that in the fall as a training period, just like I would in Division I, from the beginning of September through about mid-October, maybe October 10th-ish. The rules in Division I, as you know, you're allowed 20 hours a week that you have to monitor. In Division III, I do keep it to 20 hours, but it's not monitored. It's not a rule as it is in Division I and Division II. They don't have that rule. I don't know if you knew that or not.
No, I didn't.
But, yeah. But in the off-season, this is another big one. In Division I, you're allowed 144 days of in-season practice and competition. And then in your out-of-season in D1, you have the 8 hours a week, where two of those 8 hours can be on-court individuals, tennis lessons or on-court sessions. but the other six are general conditioning. But in Division III, you cannot work with the players at all when it's out of season. You give them a workout, and they're given the workout, and then when they come in January, they have a fitness expectation to meet. But you cannot work with them. They can't be expected to, from what I understand, to turn in a log of their fitness. So, you know, there's a real big period of time where in D1 that you're not playing tennis so much, but you're training the athletes still the same to condition them. In Division III, you don't have that per se control over your players. So, and that was tough on me at the beginning because I was so used to having everything structured for them and controlling their workouts and, you know, making sure the girls really stayed in shape. So now you really have to trust them and really have to, your leaders on your team, you really need them to make a point of emphasizing the importance of everybody keeping up their fitness levels for the success of the season in the spring. And to me, a real beauty, because I also play Division III athletics, which was a great fit for me, is that it really gives the student-athlete a balance. I mean, and in that period of time from mid-October through the rest of the fall semester, which is a good 2 months, they can get involved in something else on campus in a full-time capacity, where in Division I, they don't have the time to do that because you're in season in the fall from the beginning of September until mid-November. You know, they don't have that ability as they do in Division III. So, you know, it just depends on what a young person's looking for, what their goals are. But those are a couple of the big differences.
And Jamie, now, you mentioned a little bit of recruiting here. How is it mm-hmm. different in Division I and Division III? I mm-hmm. mean, you're recruiting for yeah. academic scholarships at Division III versus yeah. athletic at Division I.
Yeah. Yeah, it is different. It is quite a bit different. First of all, when I recruited, number one, you have to figure out what is the winning formula for that program. As I said earlier, the formula for Binghamton was much different from the formula I learned and became successful at UTEP. But the thing about those two programs, I was able to use smaller pools of possible players, pools of, you know, candidates. But in Division III, you have to have massive pools and pulling from many different areas, and you have to do it year in and year out because what works 1 year may not work the next year for whatever reason. Yeah. So you have to have huge pools, and it's almost like a filtering system, you know. And you have to look – the most important thing I look for, it's so important to have a good character person. You have a good character person, you're going to have, whether they're a great tennis player or not, they're going to be a good teammate, they're going to work hard, and they're just going to be good for the team all around. So I really, and I know you agree with me on that, that, you know, yep. finding that kid that really just loves tennis and just a good person all around, they have to be a good student just to get into Randolph and to be able to, because you want to recruit somebody academically that's going to be successful and going to be able to have a chance at a significant academic scholarship. So, and then athletically, I've always looked for me, my preference, what I found to be beneficial is to find the multi-sport athlete. So, where before I never looked at high school players simply because the level just wasn't quite there what I needed at Division II or Division I level. But in Division III, I found some real diamonds in the rough, and they've turned into some pretty good players. So you just, your pools have to be a lot bigger. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are you looking for
And now
athlete,
I'm coaching men and women, so I'm recruiting for both. So I'm pretty busy.
Yeah. Are you looking for athletes that can play tennis or tennis players that are athletes, Jamie?
Well, now I'm looking for tennis players that are athletes. But before, I was looking for any experienced tennis player at the start. I was even looking for athletes who just played tennis. But now, because our program has developed and we're at the point where we are looking for those, you know, those junior experience, the junior tennis experience players, and we're getting them to come here.
So your spring schedule, you play dual matches mm-hmm. like everybody else. What's the mm-hmm. format there? Is it a 6-3 or, I mean, you know, understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You play your doubles first
yeah.
or are they each worth a point? What do you do?
Sure. The format's the same, but the scoring's different. So you have the three doubles matches, which are 8-game pro sets. Everything's regular score. But in doubles, instead of just having one team point, as in D1, every match is worth 1 point. So there's three possible points in doubles. So it's a 9-point scale, a nine-point score instead of a 7-point. And then singles, 2 out of 3 sets, just like in D1, 1 point per match. So you win 5 of the 9 matches, you win the team match.
Do you like
that's
that?
A little bit different.
Do you like the 9-point versus the 7-point?
Yeah, you know, they're equally important. They're equally important because let me tell you, at the D3 or D2, I thought D2 is also 9 points, isn't it?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I think so. Yeah. So, I mean, you're going to have, you know, those 4 or 5 losses are just as heartbreaking as 3-4 losses.
Yeah.
Always does come down to the doubles. So instead of I think the 1 point does make it a little bit more like team because you know you got to get that 1 point, where in D3 you could still get 1 point if you lose the other two, you know. So it's still important, but do I prefer one or the other? No, I don't necessarily prefer one or the other, but I think the 1 point really can rally the group, rally your team. Because it's either 1 or 0. But in the D2, D3, the 9-point, you could at least get 1 point. And, you know, that still takes a little pressure off the singles. But in – does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
It does, Jamie. Now, let me ask you this. You know, at D1, I went recently and watched Stanford play Tulsa, and one of the things that irritates me about Division One is once they clinch the doubles point or the match, they stop. Is at D3, do you stop if you clinch the match, or do you continue to play?
Only in the tournament setting. Only in conference tournament setting. But I think that's normally just the tournament setting, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, this was
in D1.
Well, yeah, this was around it was an NCAA setting, and I didn't think about that, but I understand that they do that quite a bit, particularly in men's matches and such.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I didn't, unless it was inclement weather or something like that, we didn't, when I was at Binghamton or UTEP, we always played it out. Unless it was like, some crazy circumstances of, like I said, weather coming and somebody had a plane to catch or something, you know. But
yeah.
I would say 99.9% of the time we played it out in a dual match setting.
Yeah.
Not in a tournament.
Now, your Division III, your spring schedule, tell us what schools do you play there, Randall?
Sure. Well, the big thing for 2015 is we have fundraised for the past 3 years to go on a spring break trip to Hilton Head for spring break tennis. So all the players were all really pumped about that. So I haven't scheduled our matches yet for Hilton Head, but it really gives the team and the program opportunity to play outside of the region, play some teams who we never see, and instead of just going home for spring break, they're still training and staying sharp with all the tennis they have been accruing since the end of January. So we play schools mostly outside of spring break, going to Hilton Head this year. Most of the schools we play are in the region, are in the state of Virginia or in North Carolina. So our trips are not, we have overnights occasionally, but most of our trips are day trips. And if they're over 2 hours, we do take a charter bus. And a big difference that was something that, you know, I had to learn how to coach two programs at once, the men and the women. But in Division III, which is a little bit different from D1, the men and women play together and at the same time. You travel together. Yeah. Yeah, you travel together. So on the so really the men's and the women's team, it's almost like one big family, one big team. We do everything together, our volunteer work together, our team dinners, our team parties. We do it all we do everything together. So on those charter buses, we're all together, and we have 8 courts, so the men play on 4 courts and the women play on 4 courts, and you know, for the singles, there are 6 singles, so when a court opens up, the 5 singles goes out. So that's how that works. But so yeah, we're the ODAC. I'll tell you who's in the ODAC. A lot of Virginia schools, and Guilford, which is where I went, is the only non-Virginian school. And all of the schools in the conference are really, really highly regarded national academic schools. So we've got, well, Lynchburg College is right across town, 5 minutes from here. Us, Randolph College, Randolph-Macon, Washington and Lee, which is in Lexington, about an hour from Lynchburg. One thing people in Texas, Jason, may not know where Lynchburg is, so I should have said that at the beginning. We are 1 hour north of the North Carolina border, so 2 hours north of Greensboro, 3 hours south of D.C., so that gives you an idea of where we are, right in the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains, along the James River. But Washington and Lee is, they're historically been the best team in the conference and are nationally ranked, both men and women, year in and year out. Roanoke College, I'm drawing a blank here, Shenandoah University just joined. A couple of women's colleges, Sweetbriar and Hollins, Hampton-Sydney, one of 2 men's colleges left in the country. Emory and Henry, I'm drawing a blank. Bridgewater, Virginia Wesleyan in Virginia Beach. I might have left a couple out. There's 13 schools in the ODAC. Well, that's who we play.
That's quite a few. That's quite a few.
Yeah, it's a good conference. I mean, I love my experience at Guilford in the small college. I'm happy to be back at a small college. And this is the conference that I competed in. So I know the past 20 years of this history at the conference, at least.
Jamie, I have to ask you. Yeah, when you travel, do you travel all as one big group? Do you have a bus you travel in?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. We travel on a charter bus if the trip is over 2 hours. For instance, last fall, Methodist University down in Fayetteville, North Carolina, had a great fall event and took the men and the women. We stayed the weekend, so they, you know, we got to go out to dinner together and travel together. But actually on that one, we took 2 mini buses. My assistant drove one and I drove the other. So that was an instance where we did take mini buses. But usually if it's over 2 hours, we take a charter bus. Otherwise, we normally take a mini bus.
So you play these conference matches. Do you win the conference and you qualify for regionals, mm-hmm. or do you come together for a tournament, or how does that work in your conference?
Okay, how's the good question. The conference work, we do have a regular season schedule, which I love. I've been wanting that since I was a player myself. I mean, when I was a player, we also played a regular season from what I can remember. But at the other 2 universities I was a head coach at, there was no regular season in the conference. And I always fought for having a regular schedule in the conference. So I love how the ODAC is run. We play just, you know, you alternate home and away. So if I'm home this year, we're away the next. And, yes, you have a regular season conference champ. And then the top eight teams, so there's 12 ODAC schools that have women's tennis and 11 that have men's tennis. So if you're in the top eight, you make the conference tournament. So that's what I was saying earlier. It was so so big, really, for our men's program to make the conference tournament because they hadn't yet, and then the women finished fifth. So, and if you win, just like in D1, if you win your conference tournament, you get the automatic bid to the NCAA. So, but the past few years, Washington and Lee has won both.
Yeah, they're historically a great Division III program, right, Jamie?
They are. They are. They have a lot of good players. I mean, a lot of great depth on both men and women. I believe they both finished in the top 25 this year. I can't remember exactly what their ranking was, but somewhere between 18 and 25 in the country, I believe. Their number one singles player on the women's side is one of the top players in the Division III ranks in the country.
Mm-hmm. Well, hang in there. When I was at Lee, nobody thought we'd be able to beat Tyler, and lo and behold, after a few years, we were able to do it. So, you know, just hang in there.
Oh, yeah, we're striving for it.
I know you are.
That's the goal. That's the ultimate goal.
Yeah, and I know you're very goal-oriented, and your team's always reflected that when we're around each other, and I said it to you off the air, you know, I always got the impression that you knew what to do with a team, and that's what impressed me about you, Jamie.
Well, thanks. You are the same.
You know, there are a lot of coaches out there that know how to drive a used car. There are coaches out there that know every once in a while how to develop a player when they see some talent. But there are very few coaches out there that know how to corral a bunch of Mustangs and get them driving a herd of cattle, you know, towards a market. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, the key is peer leadership. Once you have that peer leadership and everybody's on the same page, if you have those two things, especially peer leadership, you'll have success.
Yeah, I agree with that. Now, I may keep you over a little bit here, Jamie. I enjoy talking to you, and we've talked a lot today, so just bear with me and my live listeners. And we'll lose you, and you know the drill here. You're going to have to listen to the podcast. Go to iTunes and pick that up. But, Jamie, you, this is why I wanted you on today. You coach the men and the women, and what's unique about this, you are a woman.
Yes, that is true.
So was this the original intent when you were hired on? Did you know you were going to be doing this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Did this scare you?
10 years ago, I never. No, I thought about it long and hard before I even applied for the position. It's, you know, now it's so rewarding. In 4 years in, I'm so glad that I've had this experience to coach young men. Because I've had such a blast the past 2 years with them. I mean, and sometimes, honestly, they can be easier than the women. But I've really enjoyed coaching them. And, it's just part of, I think it's so important to stay open-minded throughout your career. Because even, say, 5 years ago, I wouldn't have been open-minded to this. Because I was like, oh, my gosh, how in the world, you know, can you balance your time between two programs? Because in the Division I ranks, in any rank, doesn't matter, Division I, II, or III, I always really respected the director of tennis who could manage both programs, and I was at awe. I didn't know how they did it. Like, how did you ever have a personal life outside of that? But for me, the Division III, because of the 19 weeks that are allotted for the training, it does allow me to have a full personal life. But you know, of course, in season I am very busy. I don't know for sure. You're emphasizing me being a woman and coaching both men and women, and there aren't very many of us out there. It's true. But I think the key is just getting the players' respect, just like you do with women. And once you get a young man's respect, they'll do anything for you. I mean, I think that's really the key for your players to respect you and to show that you care about them. So once they know that you know what your stuff and that you care about them, they're going to be behind you. So, and I found that with the men too. But they want to compete for everything. Everything has to be competitive with the men. They love to compete. So there, it is different coaching them. There are differences, and that's a big one. You know, women don't want to have points for everything. They just want to play for fun sometimes. But with men, they love the competition in anything.
Now, I have a friend that I coached actually in junior college. Her name was Brenda Vlasic. Brenda is the coach at Northern Colorado. She coaches the
Yes, I know Brenda.
Well.
Yeah,
okay.
I know Brenda.
Well,
yeah, she's one that awesome. I really didn't know how she did it, and I asked her every year we played her. She does a great job.
Yeah. And, you know, I have to – I mean, do you practice together? Do you have separate practices?
Mm-hmm.
How do you do it?
Mm-hmm. It's a good question, and it's been a work in progress. Every semester I make adjustments. In an ideal world, I would prefer to run two separate practices. So, and I do have two part-time assistants, which have been – they are fantastic. You know, so each program would have three coaches at once. But our facility does not have lights, and our classes, we have a lot of science majors, and our class and being a student here is very demanding. This college really, really gets you ready for postgraduate work. It's not easy academically here. So you have to, it's really, Jason, a small window of time. Sometimes we'll even have the early morning workouts. Once or twice a week, get the weight room in or just the conditioning, say at 7 a.m. before class. And this is how committed my team has gotten now, because they could just quit like that. And they don't have an athletic scholarship hanging over their head. But this is just the commitment level that our program is at now, that they understand that this is what it takes. So they're like, no problem, coach, let's practice at 7 a.m. And then we have basically an allotted time from 4 to 7. In the afternoon, that's our bubble of time, you know, after class, and then in time for the dining hall not to close and darkness. So I have to practice them together. So the men are on the one bank of four courts, because we have two banks of four courts, if you can envision that. The women are on one bank and the men are on another bank. And, I mean, it varies from day to day, but One way that I do it is myself and the two assistants, so we can work with the group. We'll work one of the teams with three coaches. Really, we'll really work them out for about an hour, while the other team is playing matches or match situations or doing control drills or something like this that they can do on their own, and then we'll switch them. So the second hour they work with the coaches, and then, you know, have their match play or controls or whatever I set up that day. So that's one way I do it. And then sometimes once a week, I'd say once a week, sometimes twice a week, but usually just once a week, I'll mix them up. It's good for them to play with each other, because our top women are competitive with our mid to, I'd say, our lower guys. So it's good for them to play with the girls too. And definitely good for the girls to play with the guys. And they enjoy it.
Sure.
And sometimes we'll have a fun day and just have a game day, play mixed doubles, or, you know, we'll just play games the whole day. You know, doubles games, and they have a blast. And we'll do that together.
So. Now, Jamie, as you've gone through this at the Division I level, you may be awarded some time to do some privates and things like that. Can you do that still at the Division III level?
Sure. You mean coaching private lessons to people in the community?
No. I mean, I guess on the team.
Oh, yeah, we do. Yeah, but only in season. We do individuals as well. Yeah, we do that on top of team. Yeah, I found I haven't made it mandatory. When I coached at Division I, that was part of their schedule, one-on-one or a two-on-one. you know, workout with myself or an assistant. But here I haven't made that mandatory yet. I've made it volunteer where they, you know, have to request it. But a lot of them do. So I'd say I do about, I mean, it varies, but I'd say anywhere from 4 to 8 individuals a week on top of team practice, in between their class schedules or right before class or right before practice.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we do individuals, uh-huh. Yeah.
Very good.
But it has to be in season. It has to be in that 19-week period.
Yeah. So once the 19 weeks is over, you can't talk to your kids, you can't see your kid. What's the deal?
Well, we can talk to them. We give them a summer workout, out-of-season workout. They have the expectation that the fitness expectation that they're expected to meet at the beginning of the fall and the spring seasons. That's where the trust and the building of the program and the peer leadership really comes into play, and the commitment level of the player. That's the difference. That's a big difference. So.
Yeah.
No, that was it. Go ahead.
I sent you a couple of questions, and I want to address those questions, not each of them, but there are a couple I just want to ask you. You know, you mentioned that you recruit some international players. In this world of college tennis, you know, we see a lot of Americans, internationals, and so in the diverse population on a team. So to help me understand, as a college coach, what is your philosophy of building your team?
Well, you want to be competitive in the conference, number one. You know, that's the number one thing, you know, that's the number one goal you want to reach, is to be competitive. And if you're not, when I first started at Binghamton, I really just focused on American recruiting, and that was my philosophy. I'm going to look for hardworking, athletic, good students, but American. And what I found is, for at that point in the America East, when Boston University was the top team in the conference, I knew that if I was ever going, and we got close my last year to beating Boston University, and it was a great match, a lot of fun. With all Americans on the team, although I think Boston usually has all Americans too, but I knew that I probably was going to have to start international recruiting to beat the top team in the conference. So I fought it. I didn't want to, because these are American universities. This was American athletic scholarships to give Americans the opportunity to earn this college athletic scholarship. But then, you know that, okay, I'm really going to still focus on Americans, but just one or two internationals to play at the top and to really make us a contender year in and year out to win the conference. And my last year at Binghamton, I did bring in my last recruiting class before I left for El Paso. I did bring in my first international player. She ended up being an outstanding player for Binghamton University, but she was a freshman after I left. And then for 2 years, I tried recruiting Americans, the formula I used at Binghamton, at UTEP, and it didn't work. It didn't work. I wasn't able to get the level of American, because there's only so many good American players that are going to help you to beat Tulsa, SMU, Rice. You know the conference, Jason,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And we weren't winning. We weren't winning, and we were not competitive in the conference. So I am like, I've got to change my philosophy here. I've got to change my way, or I'm going to be out of a job. It's that simple. And that's why coaches do it, because they have to be competitive in their conference, and there's only so many good American players to pull from, to pull to your college or university. And for me, I felt that to give us the best chance to be competitive in that conference, at a state school in El Paso, Texas, I needed to look for another pool of players. So I pulled internationally, and it really helped. I didn't go away from American recruiting, but I just added another pool of international recruits. And so, I mean, the reason I think, and I'm doing that at Randolph too, because I need another pool. I've got so many different pools at Division III, where in Division I, I might have three main like areas that I pull from, three main pools. But in Division III, I've got to have 9-10 different pools and a lot bigger in number. And international is one of those pools. And on my team, two of my top three on my girls' team are from Central and South America that I recruited. And one of them's been all conference every year and our top player almost the whole time. She played number two a little bit. But so it's just pulling from another group. And honestly, Jason, I've really enjoyed all of my international players. It's been a great experience. I was able to travel abroad in El Paso to see the different culture, meet the family. And I think it's great for the American players because they get to experience different cultures and ways of life and learning different languages. They love it too. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And Jamie, the NCAA Division I programs underwent some spooky scoring changes this year. Any hint that Division III is going to undergo those same scoring changes?
You better tell me what the I don't know the scoring changes. Sorry.
Well, what they
I should, but I don't.
They experimented with the doubles. They in some matches they played the singles first, and if they needed to play the doubles, they would. And when they played the doubles, they shortened it to a set. And they'd only play, if it got to 5-5, they would play the tiebreaker at 5-5. And then they played no-add scoring. And then some of the singles, they played two sets and a 10-point tiebreaker. Any hints of that at Division III?
Not that I know of. Not that I know of. Now, I haven't been to the – I used to go to the National the Coaches Conference every year. But I haven't been in the past 4 years, just from, you know, budgetary reasons, but, I did not know that. And, it always seems that doubles is the one getting shortened all the time, which is a shame because it's such a fun part. I mean, it's so exciting to watch. That's one thing that I really think college tennis helps is doubles because it puts so much emphasis on doubles. And where you see in juniors and even at the professional level where the top pros aren't playing doubles, and in juniors, now the USTA and a lot of the sections are, you know, saying you have to play in at least so many doubles events a year. So I think that's good. But I can't say I'm exactly a – I mean, it's the first I've heard of it, but not really in favor of shortening, and it's almost like you want to get rid of doubles. Now, if this is for academic reasons, I don't know if that's why they're shortening it so matches aren't so long. I don't know what the reason is. Did they say what the reason was for wanting to shorten it?
Well, and I've been doing a little bit of research. I mean, because I do the show, Jamie, it seems like that it's for television. And some of the big conferences are trying to get college tennis on TV, and they're trying to figure out a way to get it under, you know, 3 hours.
Mm-hmm. So an average fan will watch it.
Yeah, yeah, that's what they're saying. Trying to make it more of a fan experience than a player's experience.
Yeah, there's so many different opinions on this, and I've even heard they've tinkered with that on the professional ranks as well. Just throwing it out there, you know, that they thought about it to draw more of a fan base. But then you look at the U.S. Open every year, and then they're sold out more and more every year. So I don't know what to say. Why do you want to change the game? But everything is so fast now with the new technologies that attention spans are getting shorter and shorter from generation to generation. So it's a good question and one that will be debated, I'm sure. I'd have to really think about it, but no, off the cuff, I don't. I would. That's going to take. Sounds like they're trying to snuff doubles out. So.
Yeah, we're going to keep.
I think that'll be a shame.
See where it goes. Last question I have for you, Coach Meganson. Here is what direction do you think American professional tennis is headed?
Well, on the women's side, I think there's some promising players. I don't know. It's hard to. I mean, Serena and Venus were so dominating almost right away. Sloane Stephens, Madison Keys, Christina McHale. I really like the way she plays. Jamie Hampton. She's a powerful player. I'm not sure how many women are in the top 100, but I think there. I know there's more American women in the top 100 than men. I think the men is really the area that seems to be more concerning than the women right now. It's kind of exciting on the women's side, I think, at this point, right now. But on the men, I mean, Isner, he's a great success story, I think. Great success story out of college tennis. But then there aren't too many. Sam Querrey seems to be a little bit down this year, would you say? A little bit?
I would say so, yes, ma'am.
Jack Sock, he seems inconsistent. Although he did won a couple rounds, I think, at the French. And Donald Young, he did pretty well at the French, but he's been inconsistent, I guess. But like, they're not teenagers anymore, though. Well, how old is Jack Sock? Maybe 20?
Yeah, I think he's a little older, maybe 21, 22.
Okay. But looking at the teenagers, there seem to be more on the women's side than on the men.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's certainly not the way it used to be where we were dominating the professional circuit. That's for sure.
Yeah.
We haven't been for, I'd almost say close to 10 years since a lot of the Spanish players came up.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's been an interesting cycle, for Americans. I mean, ever since Pete and Andre disappeared, we've been without. I mean, Roddick was okay, but we're not gonna say he was the greatest. I mean, we got one Grand
mm-hmm.
Slam title and one great Wimbledon final out of him, and then after that,
Yeah. There hasn't been a number one American male in a while, so that's I'm sure the. The USTA is trying to figure that out. When I go around recruiting and talk to different coaches, most, I would say 75% of them, maybe 80%, are fans of the Quick Start program. And I use it in my summer camps, and I think we'll see if it is – really beneficial, developing players into the pro ranks in the next 10 years, maybe 7 to 10 years, because it started about, 7, 8 years ago? Really?
No. It's only been around officially. It's only been about 3. Now we're going on maybe the 4th year. And
I feel like it's been around forever. But say you get a child started at 6 years old and they've only been in Quick Start for 4 years. So you've got another 10 years to see if it really paid off, to see if that first group of children, if the program works. So I think, at least, they're trying. Isn't that a program from Spain, similar idea?
Yeah, it is.
How they
it's
train
European
the Spanish
idea,
kids?
Yeah, you're right, Amy.
And it's been very successful there, obviously. Spain seems to be the country with the most amount of pros in the top 100.
They're doing quite well.
So they must be doing something right. So learn from them. I think learning from the other successful countries is the key. And then a little bit of a grassroots program, possibly, really getting to the parks and rec so it's more available to to more children of different economical groups and in the clubs too, high school, you know, and in the schools too.
Yeah.
They have basketball and soccer in middle schools, have tennis in too. But.
Yeah, it's a good idea. It really is. Well, Jamie, you know, it's been an outstanding day, a great visit. I enjoyed catching up with you and talking tennis with you. You know, we don't get a chance to do that often. So, but there are going to be some people that may be interested in Randolph College and yourself. Can you give the website mm-hmm. and your email address out?
Sure. The website, the college website is randolphcollege.edu for education. The athletics website is randolphwildcats.com. And what was the third question? What was the other question?
Your email address. I want to get in touch with you.
The email, which is also, yes, the email, I'll give it to you. The email is also on the website, but it's J. Meganson, which is JMEGGINSON at randolphcollege.edu. And the athletics program also has a Facebook page, so they can check out current updates on Facebook, and our website is, of course, constantly updated. So, or just Google Randolph College, and you'll find us that way, too.
Very good, Jamie. What do you have to do with the rest of your summer?
Well, I'm teaching a bunch of camps. We've got 3 weeks of our own camp, day camp here at Randolph. That's a fundraiser for our programs to keep enabling our spring break trip to Hilton Head, and a lot of recruiting.
Sounds like you'll stay busy.
Yes, pretty busy.
Yeah.
But it's
very good.
We're glad it's warm.
Yeah, I'd imagine so. Well, it's good to catch up with you, Jamie, and I appreciate you spending some time today talking to us about Randolph College.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and I look forward to you. I'll have you back on in the future since we've reconnected, and we could talk this D3 stuff. It's fascinating to me, and now I've got a good contact here. We can visit about this stuff more often.
Absolutely. Be happy to.
Okay, very good, Jamie. Have a great day and a great summer.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Jamie Campbell Meganson, and I know her as Jamie Campbell, and do know her as Jamie Meganson as well, but she's one of the great American coaches out there. She gets the team aspect of college coaching tennis, which a lot of people do not get. We always used to kind of compare notes and things, and Jamie and I were the two weird coaches. We would have our kids do some weird things as we got our teams together. We would talk to them about things that other college coaches just look at us and go, what are they doing over there? And that's because we got it. We knew how to get a team from point A to point B. We knew that there was a periodization here to trying to get our teams ready for championship play, and that's why Jamie and I were able to get along so well and cooperate with each other. And she's just a great person out there. If you've got some players in mind, look her up over there at Randolph College. I know that she'll be getting better and better, and she'll be beating Washington Lee before we know it. Now, next week on the show, we're going to have a return guest here, Coach Avi Keigel from Barry University. We had Avi on in the spring, and we thought that he might be doing well there at Barry, but lo and behold, he won the national championship, so we'll have him back on and visit about that national championship into the season run there, and he'll let him tell us about it. So we're excited to have him, and then we'll have a couple of weeks of these coaches that won the national championship, and we're working on getting even more. So excited about what's happening with the college tennis world, and I hope you'll keep listening in, and go out there and hit some tennis balls if you get a chance. But thanks for listening, and have a great day. Bye-bye.